Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello and welcome back to the Sunday Podcast, presented by SportsShoes.com. I'm Ollie Lum.
And I'm Matt Seddon.
We are back for Season 3, and it's going to be a good one.
With the aim of raising the profile of British distance running, we're bringing you more content than ever.
Every week, we'll give you insights into the lives and training of some of the UK's top athletes and coaches.
As well as all the latest updates from the races up and down the country and around the world.
You can listen to us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and all major podcast streaming platforms.
Keep a lookout for our new YouTube channel too, where we're posting workout videos, shoe reviews, and much more.
Stay up to date by following us on Twitter and Instagram at Sunday Podcast.
And if you want to drop us a line, send us an email to info@sundaypodcast.com.
Thanks for listening. We hope you enjoy the episode.
Another coach on the podcast. This week's guest is none other than New Balance Manchester coach, Helen Clitheroe. Helen had a fantastic career herself, making 2 Olympic Games over the 1500 metres and over the steeplechase. And she took over as Team New Balance Manchester head coach from Steve Vernon last year. Just on a Sunday podcast content front, we've just released a Valencia 10K vlog where we went last weekend on our YouTube, so check that out. But for now, back to Helen and enjoy the episode.
Helen, first off, just welcome to the podcast. It's great to have you on. You were just showing us your scenery in Flagstaff right now in the snow. How's it been there? Because obviously it's been snowing quite hard for a few days now.
Yeah, I mean, the first few days have been really, really good. I mean, there was a bit of snow down on the ground when we arrived here, but the running was fine. You know, you could just drive to a good place to run. But yeah, yesterday morning was a bit of a shock. It's dumped quite a lot of snow down and it's still going. So it's been a treadmill day today. We managed to sort of slide our way in the Jeep to the gym. But yeah, hopefully it won't last too much longer.
Yeah, definitely. Like, we're going to chat about, obviously, try and ask you what you're doing out there. I think most people know with New Balance Manchester and stuff, but first of all, can we just rewind and chat about your own career as an athlete? I mean, yeah, most people start the sport in cross country, and it's something you kind of were known for yourself. And I actually didn't know this about you at all. I know you made world cross teams, but I didn't realize you made 8 consecutive world cross teams. Quite a stat. Where do you think that sort of ability or want and desire for the mud came from?
Well, one thing that was helpful was that it was 4K. So I was a 1500 meter runner then, and the 4K world cross came in, so it was a long course and a short course, so I think it just attracted quite a few track runners to sort of do cross country. But I'd grown up doing cross country. My first GB vest was for the world cross. So, you know, it's sort of where I came from, really, even though I always sort of did track at the time. But yeah, I think the fact that they had the 4K, and also the Eurocross was 5K then. So it's like suited me sort of being a middle distance runner to sort of go onto the mud. And I just always did it every winter, and I never even considered doing indoors, to be honest with you, while the World Cross was an option, because it was every year then as well. So yeah, it's quite a good stack doing 8 in a row. And I think the year I didn't do it was the last one, and that was because I did the Commonwealth in Australia, and people went straight from Melbourne to I think it was in Japan. So I didn't bother doing that one.
Do you think do you think the cross country, the world cross, kind of falling, you know, going to every 2 years, has that affected our talent? Because obviously the level of distance running is almost improved over the last few years. Do you think that's affected us at all? The fact that the World
Cross Country, I think it's a shame, to be honest with you, because I think it's sort of devalued the World Cross a little bit in some respects, because it's sort of, if it's every year, it's something that people always like focus on the trials, and you'd have a trial for it, and it would be, and I think obviously because of COVID there's been a few missing years as well, so that's probably just made it even harder. Hopefully now it's starting back, that it'll get a bit of excitement behind it, and the fact that there's the relay as well, I think that's quite cool. So hopefully, you know, it becomes a competition that people are sort of putting in their calendars. But with it being alternate years, I think it's sort of, people will start doing indoors as an alternative, and maybe some of the cross runners will turn to other things on them alternate years. But yeah, like you say, it's not done much harm to the sort of talent and the way it's going. So, but you know, I, for me personally, it was just a fantastic sort of en route into athletics and making teams and understanding how you get on teams and how that works. And I think it was a real good grounding for me, sort of the first few competitions I did where I was sort of on teams with like Paula Radcliffe and people like that. It was like a real eye-opener. You know, I went to with my first World Cross. I don't even think I'd gone running twice a day in my life, you know, and I was like, what are these girls like going training twice a day? I was like ringing my coach up going, they're going out for another run. Oh my God. He's like, don't worry, don't worry. So yeah, I was very green and naive when I sort of made my first team. So it was like to be amongst them sort of girls like Paula, Liz Yellin, that sort of them sort of athletes who I'd looked up to, was, I learned a lot from them, and it was, you know, good grounding stuff for the rest of my career.
Yeah. Obviously, like you mentioned, it being the 4K as well. And we always kind of, I think most people think that's a bit of a shame that that no longer goes on. And I think about some of the athletes you've got now, obviously Hannah Nuttall probably springs to mind as someone who that would suit perfectly for.
Yeah.
What do you think about that in general?
I think it would have been, I think it's a shame that it got taken out, because I do think it attracts the middle distance athletes to try cross country. And it's a good way of sort of finding, you know, having a competition in the winter that you can sort of focus on if you're not that bothered about indoors. So yeah, I think it's a shame, because I think it did bring people into the cross country, because at the time when I was making the teams, like Hayley Tullett was making a team, you know, there was quite a few of us who were sort of making 1500 teams on the track that would be on the World Cross team. I mean, I never did particularly well. I think my best position was maybe top 20, I think about 19th, but you know, it was absolutely stacked as well, you know, so that was a really good result. But yeah, I think it's a shame that it's not there anymore, but you don't want to dilute things too much. There's too many competitions, I suppose. You want people to sort of aim for the same thing, and maybe having the 10K just takes 8K to 10K, or even if they move it up to 10K, is like even less middle distance athletes are going to go for it.
I guess, Helen, we want to move, you know, from your World Cross, and you said you were making 1500 teams at during your World Cross career as well. You know, one of the first teams you made was that 2000 team in the Olympics over 1500. So talk us through that experience, what it was like, because I don't think we've had anyone on the podcast before who went to the Sydney Games.
He's so old. Yeah, it was pretty cool. Like, I'd made the Commonwealth team in 98 and the World Champs in 99, so I'd had a bit of, you know, had like a feeling that I could maybe make the team, and I was working full-time at the time, so I'd asked work if I could take some unpaid leave, because I really thought I could make the Olympic team. So yeah, it was like absolute dream come true. I mean, I think even though I'd been to a couple of major champs, it was a bit of a shock, you know. It's a massive deal, isn't it, going the Olympics? And I was sort of, I regret now my through the first round, and then I got into the semi-final and I was like, I didn't know what to do. So it sort of made me realize you have to sort of plan for each, you know, each step of a competition. I'm not saying I could have, you know, maybe I don't think I was ready to make the final, but yeah, it was an amazing experience, and again sort of rubbing shoulders with some really massive athletes, you know, that I'd looked up to, and sort of gave me the sort of belief that I could, you know, continue in the sport and make teams, you know, for the next few years, which I did.
Yeah, what were you doing at the time then, if you were working full time, and who was coaching you, who was advising you? Yeah.
So I was at the time, I was coached with my club coach, Jeremy Harries. So I'd been coached by him from a teenager. So I made the Olympics and I got my Commonwealth Games medal under him. And he actually was coached to John Nuttall as a kid as well. So me and John, both from Preston Harriers. So when Jerry decided to sort of hang up his coaching hat, it was a sort of quite a nice sort of simple move to John. And John took over my training then. So that was about 2004. So from like being a teenager to 2004, I was with my club coach. So yeah. But yeah, I guess because myself and John had the same coach, we had sort of, it just worked really well. And I'd sort of idolized him a little bit growing up because he was like an Olympian and from my club. So that was, yeah, that was it. It was a nice fit to sort of stay with him, but also like really nice to know that, you know, you can take that journey with someone who's coached you from being a teenager.
Mm-hmm. Obviously, like it was a familiar in terms of a person, but in terms of like the coach in itself and the training you did, was that familiar as well?
I think when I changed from Jerry to John, there's a few things changed, and within a few years, I had the opportunity, I'll say, to do the steeplechase, which was something I would never ever have considered in my life. But it was sort of put to me because I'd made teams 1500 up to sort of 2005, and then the steeple was coming into world champs. I'm really bad with dates. It was either 2006, 2007. And it was going to be the first time in the Olympics in Beijing. So they were sort of trying to encourage some girls to give it a go. We already had like Tara Kriswicki was sort of running pretty well over it, but I just thought I'd give it a go. And the first one I did was just horrendous. I was like, what am I doing? I'm a 1500 meter runner. But yeah, it gave me another opportunity to sort of try the steeple, and I went to Worlds and Olympics for that as well. So yeah, I don't know if I'd have done that if I was still with my club coach, but it just sort of opened the door to try something else. And I think that's probably what kept me in the sport for so many years, because I was sort of 40 when I did my last major championships at the Commonwealth Games. So it was like a bit of a, I guess if I hadn't done the steeple, I might have finished a bit sooner than that.
Well, it's obviously there's a lot of, you know, 1500 meter runners who, you know, potentially there's always question marks. Could they do the steeple? Could they try the steeple? You obviously did it successfully as well. And you kind of said, you know, what you told yourself, what were you doing? But yeah, what made you kind of transition? Was it the coach, or was it just, this looks cool, this was new? And
it was a little bit British Athletics.
Was it? Of,
yeah. I was on funding for 1500 and I had to come in the top eight, I think, at Worlds, and I didn't. I think I came 10th or something like that. And so I was like, oh, they were like, we'll keep you on a development level package if you try steeple. So I was like, okay. So honestly, that is why I did it. And yeah, the first race I did, I went literally in at the deep end, excuse the pun, because I went and did the Super Grand Prix at Doha. So it was like before Diamond Leagues were a thing. And so that was my first race, like a really big race. And I remember I was running around sort of first 2K thinking I'm going to absolutely smash the British record, and then I absolutely died. And I remember like getting my phone and walking off the infield, like calling John saying, what, this is ridiculous, like never again. But I was so bad at the water jump was so bad. I was literally doing a squat every water jump. So then I went off and practiced with the help of Stuart Stokes. I called him up because he's a good friend of mine. I was like, you're going to have to help me practice the water jump. So I did that. And then I got down to, I think I did like 840 something on my next one. And then qualified for the world. So in my first season. So, you know, it wasn't, the standards were a lot lower than on the women's steeple. But yeah, it was like, I was a little bit like, I can't give up at the first sort of, because it was not good. But yeah. I got down to 9:29 in two or three seasons. So, I think it was a great opportunity. And I understand people are afraid of it, girls especially. But I do think now the level of female steeple in Britain is so high. It's not like an easy option, where I think people used to see it as a bit of an easy option, and it isn't. It's a really hard competition, whether you're fast or not. But yeah, the standards are super high. But I just think, you know, it would be good to see more people give it a bash.
Did it make it easier for yourself doing the steeple? Because it was a new event in the Olympics and relatively new in the world champs. Were all the international women in a similar boat? Were you almost talking on the circuit being like, goodness me, this is harder than we thought it would be?
I don't, Yeah, maybe a little bit like that. There's a few people, like, you know, every year there'd be somebody else who'd try it. You'd be like, oh, they're giving it a go, you know. So it's sort of, you sort of thought, yeah, there's going to be someone's going to smash it in a minute, you know, like once people sort of get to grips of how to train for it and, you know, what you need to do. Like for me, I think physically, like I could run fast on the flat, but my hurdling was not the best. I was, you know, I wasn't natural. I'd never jumped over a hurdle before the age of maybe, I think it was about 32, 33, something like that. You know, so it's like, you know, someone like Lizzie Bird has done, you know, heptathlon as a junior athlete. You know, it's like hurdling is second nature. For me, it was just like not second nature. Mm-hmm. It was tough. So yeah, I really used to wind myself up. I used to get really frustrated with the event because I'd never been like that on a flat race. I'd just be so, you know, so competitive and always sort of back myself, and on the steeple I would be like beating myself up quite a lot for sort of having a bad jump or a bad water jump. So yeah, I did find it quite frustrating, and I wonder what would happen if I carried on for a few more years, because if you look at the statistics, quite a lot of women, especially sort of, you know, in 5 years in, they'll do their sort of best competition, you know, they'll make a breakthrough, and I probably did 3 years and then I was like, I'll switch to 5k, 10k. Right. So yeah, you know, you sort of think, oh, maybe I could have improved, but at that point I was like, nah, I want to do something different.
So. Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because I was kind of looking, and considering the event was new then, your 9:29 is still fourth all time Brit, which yeah. I know the two girls recently, like Lizzie Bird and Amy Pratt, have kind of really pushed it on, but apart from that, we haven't seen that many people like really take to the steeplechase. So it's seriously impressive time.
I think that's the thing, is you've got to commit to doing it for a few years. I think it takes, you know, especially if it's something that you've not practiced. I think, you know, I think that's why, you know, because the guys have been doing it sort of right through school, like from my era, you know, the guys have been doing it right through school where the girls hadn't. So, you know, it's, they'd had them years behind them and were sort of doing better. Whereas I think because it was so rare for females to give it a go, it was, I just think you need to sort of think, right, I'm going to do it and do it for a few seasons to make a breakthrough. Take a while.
Yeah. I mean, you could probably say that's true for all events, couldn't you? You know, not just, you know, every event is, you're looking at 5 years training at the highest level.
I guess because of the technical aspect though, it's, you know, it's not just the sort of getting used to moving up a distance, for example. It's sort of the technical aspect. You have to be quite robust. You have to be, you know, decent at drills and jumping and timing and that sort of thing. So, I guess the technical aspect just adds something else onto, you know, if you've never done it before.
So my question to you, Helen, did, when you were kind of learning the event more, you know, your second or third year, did specific steeplechase training affect your flat speed at any point?
I think I could probably still have run a decent flat race, but I think because often you were sort of chasing qualifying time so much in the summer season, so you sort of have to go and do another steeple because you were like trying to, like, that was my experience, was like I'd usually get my qualifying time at like British Champs or something, Last Chance Saloon. So I guess I didn't run as much on the flat, but then when I switched back to the flat after that, I was strong. I was ready to sort of move up to 5k, 10k, and I still ran really quick over 3k and 1500. So I think I'm grateful for doing it because I think it gave me, you know, gave me the strength to sort of move up quite naturally to the longer distances.
Mm. On distances, I did want to ask, was the 3000 just like the perfect distance for you? Obviously, steeplechase, 4k cross, European indoors gold in 2011.
Yeah, I think I wish we'd had more chances to race 3k. I wished it had been a championship distance outdoors. I absolutely love 3Ks, and I didn't actually run that many outdoors, to be honest with you. I had more, you know, more success doing it indoors, and I guess that would be because outdoors I would be trying to make a team, so, you know, it wasn't always appropriate to run a 3K if I was sort of chasing a 1500 qualifying time or a steeple qualifying time or a 5K qualifying time. I think it probably was my natural distance.
You said you obviously managed to extend your career into your 40s. You know, bar kind of changing events and, you know, keeping your mind fresh, I guess, and taking on new challenges, was there anything else you could put that longevity down to?
I think I was quite old when I made my first team. You know, I didn't really have a junior career. Well, I didn't have a junior career. So I was like 24 when I made my first GB team. And I hadn't really trained that hard prior to that. And I think so in training years, I was quite young. I'd always been a member of an athletics club from like the age of 11, but never really. And nobody ever sort of said, oh, if you do this, you can go to the Olympics. It was a sort of like a bit of fun, just what I did as a hobby. So I think maybe just the fact that I'd not smashed myself as a kid is one of the reasons. I think the other reason is that I was really into sort of gym and conditioning, and I was really robust and didn't get very many injuries. I probably only got injured in 2004, which kept me out of the Olympics that year. And I got injured in 2012, and I was like getting on a bit then. So I was really, really lucky with not getting injured as well. But I do put that down to sort of being, you know, sort of really strong and, you know, making the most of my strengths, which was sort of being able to sort of do gym pretty well and, you know, keep that part of my training as good as I could. And I think, yeah, I think that's massively part of why I kept going for so long. The other thing is, as I got older, I probably once I was sort of over 35, where I probably was a bit more sort of vocal about if I was, I didn't just do it. If it was on the plan, I'd be like, look, I'm really knackered. I think we should, you know, have another day before I do something hard, you know, so I've respected my body a little bit more, but I was still doing the volume. It was just the sessions. And I think that was something that, it was just a bit of trial and error, but I think that's probably something that I, you know, me and my coaches sort of did just naturally as I got older. I sort of changed the way I trained a little bit, and it probably suited me to sort of do the longer stuff because of that, because I wasn't sort of doing as much intense work.
Yeah, like you say, 24 is quite late to make your first team. Like, do you remember anything changed, like mindset wise that said, I'm now gonna take it more seriously, do a bit more training?
Yeah, so there was a girl at my club called Michelle Mann who she made the world cross team as a junior. And we'd been training together a bit, and that really, really inspired me. So she was younger than me, but I was like, well, you know, I didn't really even sort of have that thought in my head about sort of trying to make teams. So we became quite good friends, and we trained a lot together. And I was like, you know, so we really pushed each other on. I think that's one of the main reasons that I sort of had the idea that I could maybe, you know, be at that level of athletics. Prior to that, I was sort of happy to make a kind of cross countries in Brussels and sort of place like the north and things like that. So yeah, I guess it just took time to develop to that level. And I think just having the opportunity on the cross country, you know, made me believe that I could do it on other things. Like the first year when I made the world cross team, I also made the Commonwealth Games team. You know, so once I made the team, it was like just every year was sort of pretty much making teams unless I was injured. So I was pretty lucky.
They are just like you say, it opens a door and it's a stepping stone, isn't it? You start to then, once you've made one, you're like, what's next? You're always looking at the calendar, aren't you, where that next team
is. Totally. And then you're surrounding yourself by people who have the same mindset, you know. So if you're going and training, you know, I used to train in Loughborough quite a lot with John. Obviously I'd already been making teams for a bit then, but you sort of, it's just normal that you're surrounded by people who are just have that mindset. You're not just the only one at your club sort of thinking like that. And I think I just sort of, I don't know what it was, just something flicked in my head where when I was younger, I was probably more interested in socializing and didn't see running as like the number one thing. And then I just got to a point where I was like, I've done that now. I want to really sort of focus. And I decided, I went to my coach and I said, right, I want to do, you know, like, I think I can do well at this, and just went from there, really. So it was a bit of a change of mindset and, you know, sort of a desire that I wanted to sort of be at that level.
When you're in that cycle of making teams, how do you deal with the disappointment of perhaps not making a team?
I was quite lucky in that I often made teams that I went for. but you know, I remember the year in like the Olympic year 2004, you know, walking off the track thinking, I've messed up and just wasn't quite ready. And I think I did the qualifying time like 2 weeks after the team was picked, and I ran like pretty fast. I was like, I just, you know, the timing just wasn't right for me because I'd had a bit of an injury. You know, so that was really disappointing. In 2012 as well, you know, that was a massive goal for me to keep going. And I got really bad plantar fasciitis, and you know, I'd gone as far as like, I was like sure I was going to make the team, and we bought tickets for everything for my, you know, my husband, and but I went and I sat in that stadium every night of athletics, and I watched it and I loved it, you know. And like some people were saying, why are you going? I was like, I love athletics. So yeah, you know, like, yeah, it was disappointing, but I still thought, now I still want to sort of have a bit of this moment of like being involved in this, even if I'm a spectator. So yeah, I think you've just got to take the rough with the smooth. And I suppose as I got older, I was always a little bit like, it's an absolute bonus if I make a team, you know, if someone's young gets on the team ahead of me, then good for them, you know. And I probably had that attitude throughout my career, was, you know, I used to think this could be the last one, you know, to make the most of it, and really tried to enjoy every time that I, you know, qualified for a major competition, because I, you know, I'd not had it on a plate like some people who'd come through the junior ranks and just expected it. I knew how hard I'd worked to get to that level, and I tried to appreciate it. I remember walking in the stadium for Beijing Olympics, and I was like, I was super emotional because I thought, this is probably the last, you know, this is the last one. Like, look around, sort of enjoy every minute of it, you know, because this is pretty special. And I had to really like pull myself together before the race. I mean, I ran a PB on that. I didn't make the final by like, I think I was like a 10th off making the final, and there were some dodgy people in the final. But yeah, you know, it's like, I still was, it was still an amazing experience. And I think, you know, just got to, as an athlete, it's quite easy to become complacent. I think you've got to sort of, my experience is like, if you've got to appreciate every time you get to do something like that, because it's pretty special.
Is it harder as a coach experiencing that then? If one of the athletes now doesn't make a team that they've maybe been aiming for, is it harder for you then?
Yeah. Yeah, it's coaching's hard. Like, you're, as if you, especially if you've come from an athlete to coach sort of route, because when you're an athlete, it's on you, isn't it? You're stepping the line. It's like, doesn't matter. You've got to sort of do the job, and it's on you. It's not anybody else's fault if you have a bad day. But as a coach, you know, you take it on yourself. But you're so, you know, you can't do anything about it. It's down onto the athlete. So it's actually, I think like I've been more nervous for competitions as a coach than an athlete, because you're just not in control like you would be as an athlete. But I think, you know, that's also gives me a good experience to sort of know, you know, I know how a championship works, and I know the feelings and the emotions, you know, probably more than a lot of people, because I've been to so many championships. So, you know, hopefully that experience, you know, helps me help them in them situations. But yeah, of course, it's disappointing if people don't make teams, and it's not my disappointment. I'm disappointed for them, because I just want people to be happy. And that's ultimately what I want from, you know, for athletes, is that they enjoy what they're doing and they're happy and they get the most out of themselves and the most out of their career, because it's their career, not mine. That's the way I sort of think of it.
What is it, you know, after your retirement, were you always thinking, I want to get into coaching?
I sort of fell into coaching a little bit. I'd done my coaching qualification a long time ago. Me and Jenny Meadows did it at the same time when I was still competing. And I just sort of thought, I want to have it so that if I decide to coach, I've got it. And then I was still running and competing myself, and a guy called Chris Livesey, who he'd made junior teams for cross country. He was a really good fella, and he's from my town. I just bumped into him running. I was like, oh, you're back running. He'd had like really bad Achilles injury, so he'd sort of left the sport. So I sort of said, oh, why don't you come down and train with us? And at the time I was working remotely from my coach, you know, maybe go to Loughborough once a week, but I was So I'd sort of be rallying a load of lads to train with me. And that's how I sort of had a little, so I almost had a group that it wasn't my training. It was what I was doing, but I was like, oh, do you want to do this? And then with Chris, I quite soon realized that I needed to adapt his training because it was too good for, you know, to just come and join my session and pace me. So I sort of started writing him plans, and it sort of, so he was the first one I coached, but I was still competing myself at the time, and, you know, came back and sort of won the Northern Champs and things like that on the track, you know, that was pretty cool. And then, yeah, then a few people started asking me to help them. So sort of did it like that. Sort of, it was just a natural thing to do. And I guess I was still, like, when I started coaching the first girl that I coached, Jackie Fairchild, I was still pretty fit. So we ran quite a lot together, and I'd pace her quite a lot in sessions. And it was sort of, the deal was like, look, I'm still running, but I'm going to, you know, I'm happy to write you a plan and I'll pace you. And, you know, I paced a few races and things like that for her as well. So yeah, I guess it was just sort of, it just felt really natural. And also I feel like it was, I'm lucky because I know a lot of people struggle when they leave the sport. Especially like someone like myself who'd done it for so long, you know, that had been like my whole adult life really. So to stay involved and still have that sort of routine of going on to training, you know, in the, you know, Tuesday, Thursday, Saturday, whatever, whenever you meet, to not being a competitive athlete, quite easy in some respects. I didn't ever think, oh, I wish I was racing still. I was sort of quite happy still being involved, but from the other side. I remember going to my first, watching my first British Champs outdoors with my sister, and she looked at me, she's like, are you all right? And I was like, yeah. I was like, I actually can't believe I used to be down there, like standing on that line. It seems like bizarre. But yes, yeah, so I feel like I'm quite lucky that I had just that easy transition from athlete out of athletics, whether I'll coach or not, but to stay involved in the sport. You know, it's really special and it's great, you know, now to have the opportunities I've had over the last few years in coaching has been really cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, let's talk about some of those now, because obviously you're leading the group at Team New Balance Manchester, but when you first started, you were working alongside Steve Vernon. So how did that first come about?
Well, I was working at the time at the Leeds Talent Hub. So I'd been working there for a couple, like since that started, so along with Andy Henderson. I absolutely loved it working there. Me and Steve and have been friends for a long time. I think he was like on my second Eurocross team. So yeah, we've known each other. I've known him since he was like 18 or something. So yeah, and over the last few years, so especially during lockdown, we sort of planned a weekly chats, just like coaching chats, geeky chats. So, you know, although we'd always been friends, that sort of developed in sort of more just a, you know, we talk about coaching quite a lot. And then he asked me if I would be interested in coming along to Team Balance Manchester and working alongside him. And that was a really hard decision because I was really happy with, you know, in Leeds and the athletes I was coaching there. But it's close to where I live. I live in Preston, so it's close to where I live. And ultimately, I wanted to be a performance coach. So I was like, I cannot let this opportunity go. So, it was, you know, initially I went there part-time. Oh, I didn't know he was going to leave. But, you know, it's a massive opportunity for him to take the job at British Athletics. And yeah, so it was a bit of a whirlwind, I'm not going to lie, when I took over fully for everyone. But yeah, it's been a pretty cool year. And it's, you know, it's not easy for everyone, obviously. It's really hard, especially when everyone was super happy with Steve being their coach, and it was it's a really great setup. But I think I've tried to respect what he did and what he did, what he does, and our philosophies are quite similar, so that's good. And yeah, I feel like it's, you know, on a whole been really reasonably successful.
Yeah, I think it's hard to, very hard to replace a coach who was kind of loved and did a great and has done a great job. Whereas it's obviously a lot easier if a coach has kind of left on mutual grounds or whatever, and you know, the athletes maybe weren't performing, and then they get you in. So that must have been a very tough, you know, transition.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I'd been there a few months before he left. But it is a bizarre, isn't it, where a manager goes out and someone comes in, yeah, where you don't choose your coach, which is not the usual way in athletics. And that's what makes it a good team. You know, there is a team, and I think, you know, we all just sat down and been quite open and honest with each other throughout the whole process. And I'm like, I'm just going to say how I'm feeling. I want you to say how you're feeling. Like, me and Steve have completely different personalities. I'm quite quiet. He's quite an extrovert, I would say. I hope he doesn't mind saying that, but which is one of the reasons I was really looking forward to working with him, because I thought we could will complement each other quite well. But obviously, like, so in terms of just personality, I'd say he's like a pump-up guy, have a chat about things, you know, so it's like quite a different style in that respect. But I'm lucky in that, you know, it wasn't just like, see you later, I've gone. You know, we still spoke quite a bit in the first few months, and, you know, it that helped the transition.
What was that transition from an assistant coach? Did you feel your personality had to change a little bit, or did you remain the kind of same Helen from assistant to head
I guess
coach?
Like, it even now it's like there, I wasn't really, I guess we were working together. He didn't ever make me feel like I was his assistant. So yeah, I think we, you know, we sort of would talk about the plans, and, you know, before he moved on, you know, that's how we were doing it. And I was sort of probably taking a little bit more role in the girls at that point anyway. So it'd be like, I'd maybe go off and do something with the girls, and, you know, the guys would be doing something different. So that wasn't so hard. I don't feel I've changed my personal. I am, you know, it's like, this is who I am. Like, you don't like it, tough. obviously I'm not going to try and be him. I'm me. I've got to believe that I've got quite a lot of experience as well, even though maybe not as well known as a coach. But I have been coaching quite a long time. So, and it's gone all right.
Yeah, definitely. And Helen, what does your kind of schedule look like day to day then? I know obviously you're on camp at the moment, but normally when the guys are based in Manchester, what does it look like for you?
Yeah. So obviously on camp, I'm here, I'm 24/7. But at home, I live 2 hours away from where they train. Well, it's not that far, but it takes 2 hours. So I tend to go, we work out on Tuesdays and Fridays, and I'll go to gym as well. And then obviously we often have split weekends, so it sort of works out. I'm not there every single minute of the day, but yeah, I'm there for all the sessions and gym and competitions if possible. But yeah, that's pretty much the schedule. The team meet up for most runs, and a few of them, you know, we have a house, so a few of them live in a house. Not everybody lives in the house, but that's tends to be the sort of meeting point. And you know, we'll sort of go back there and after sessions and stuff, and sort of have a bit of a review of stuff. So yeah, it's good. It's obviously, you know, you try and make, there's things that I'm doing slightly different than what was done before, and some will work and some won't. But it's just how it goes in jobs, isn't it? But yeah, I think, does that answer your question?
Yeah, definitely. No, I was just interested to see like what kind of your own schedule looks like, and how much you're with the team and things like that. So yeah. Is that something that like you want to keep the same, or have you got plans for the future? Are you going to move to Stockport at all? Or
I don't think I'm going to move. It would be better if I was living there, I'm not going to lie. But yeah, you know, my husband's job's in Preston, and you know, he's the main breadwinner in our house. So yeah, I think I'll be staying in Preston. It's, you know, I'm quite used to the drive now. And yeah, I guess over time things might change in terms of when we meet and stuff. But yeah, I think how it is working pretty well at the moment.
Yeah, I think especially when you go on camps, you know, you're probably looking at twice a year, maybe even more. You get that real kind of one-to-one time with them.
I love it on camps. Yeah, it's great. I mean, I suppose it's just like going back into my old life a little bit, so, where you're just sort of living and breathing it, and that's nice. But it's also nice to sort of see the athletes on a day-to-day basis, not just on a session day, you know, on other run days. I obviously see them on runs at home as well, but yeah, that's quite nice to sort of get a better picture of everything. So I appreciate the time that we're on camp, even though, you know, so we're here for it's the best part of 5 weeks because some of them are going on to Boston to do the indoor Grand Prix. And last year we were away in Samritz on two camps, you know, so I spent quite a lot of time with them. And I think that really helped the transition because we pretty much went away on our first altitude camp together and Steve didn't come. And that was sort of like, right, I'm going to have to just roll with this.
Yeah.
So, you know, so right from the start, we sort of had the opportunity to spend sort of quite a lot of time together. So that was really good.
I think you really get to see the athletes kind of ups and downs on camp, don't you? Because everyone always has ups and downs on camp, regardless of kind of how good you are.
And we're all in one house here. So there's 9 of us in a house. So you have to retreat sometimes to your room for a little bit of hum, a little bit of me time.
Yeah, exactly.
How
are the team going though? Because I'm sure a lot of people be intrigued, you know, how's
it's been really good out here. We came out here. I know it probably people are thinking, what the hell if you come to Flagstaff in the snow, but there's loads of groups here at the minute. It's amazing. And we came because Team New Balance Boston are also here. So linking up with Mark Coogan, the coach. And so last week, which was the first week where we worked out, what date did we come? We came on we arrived on the 4th. So last week was our first sort of proper hard session week. So we linked in with Boston for that, for the girls, and that was really good. And Adam linked in with the lads. And we've generally met up with the groups on most runs until the snow came. So like, for example, the first long run we did, it's like there's New Balance, Manchester, Boston, Hawker, you know, there's all the different teams just sort of congregate, and there'd be like 40 athletes just setting off on the run together, even if they're not doing the same thing. So yeah, it's a really nice environment. Everyone's just like super helpful and friendly. This is my first time in Flagstaff as well. So that's, you know, that's really good to have, you know, the people with a bit more experience of the area, that I can sort of go, what are you doing today? Where are you going? Where is there no snow? So yeah, it's been really good so far, and everyone's training really well. So that's good.
Yeah. Can you let us know who's racing what in terms of like events or things at New Balance?
So we have Hannah Nuttall, Izzy Fry and Kira McGeehan doing the 3000 in Boston. Mm. And then the others are coming back. We have a couple of the girls going to be doing a marathon in the spring, probably Copenhagen. But we'll see if we can get in it. So yeah, there's various things going on. Adam's going to do London, I think. So yeah, bit of variety going on.
Yeah, you've been able to have some like recruitment since you joined as well. Like, do you mind, are you able to tell us, like, were they in the pipeline already? Have you been able to have like
so Philly Bowden has come to the team since Hannah came when I joined the team, so that was good. And I mean, that was like mine and Steve were sort of keen to recruit Hannah, and of course because we had the link with John, it sort of helped that recruitment process. And then Philly Bowden's come to the team. I coached Philly for 2 years anyway, so that was sort of quite natural. So I'm, you know, delighted she's been able to come to the team, and she's relocated to Manchester. And then who knows who will come next.
Is it fair to say there's more of a female environment within Team New Balance Manchester now? Is that the vision?
Currently, yes.
Yeah, currently, yes. Is that the vision for the future, though, basically?
I don't know. Obviously, like, if you look at it on paper, it's very easy to slip other female athletes in to a group like this that can sort of, so that people can train together. But obviously, we've still got Adam on the team, and I don't want him to be feeling like he's got to do everything on his own all the time. So yeah, you know, it's certainly not definite that would be how it goes forward. But yeah, currently, you know, we're a female heavy team. And maybe that's because I'm a female coach that, you know, that's the people who want to come. I don't know. We'll find out, won't we?
The thing is, there is a lack of, you know, female distance running groups in the country, really. Isn't there a lot of females train on their own? you know, under one coach, either solo or with guys, don't they? So I think that is an attraction for a lot of high class females to train with other females, the power of that.
Yeah, it's really great. I would love to have the opportunity to train in a group like this when I was competing. You know, it's, I think the team bond and the sort of way they back each other is really special. And that was really noticeable this summer, you know, especially around Kira's of performances over the summer. I feel like that environment we had on training camp where everyone was sort of in a really good headspace and really happy made a massive, you know, difference to her performance and performances this summer. You know, so it's like, although one person gets the result, it's like the whole team are celebrating and, you know, want the success of all the others. So every time someone does well, it's like, it, you know, I feel like that's really nice and special thing that we've got in the team. So hopefully, yeah, it'd be nice to grow it and, you know, have other people come in. Obviously, it's not going to be too many more, but yeah, we'll just have to watch this space and see what happens.
Yeah, no, it's great to see it. It's going well, and you're obviously carrying it on well. You kind of put in, you must be putting your own sort of spin on it. It's all, has the goals of the group itself changed? Like, do you have like a kind of a 1 year, 5 year, 10 year plan for the group, or is that shifting at all? Or is it pretty much what it kind of found out as?
I guess it's like individual as well as team, you know, so you've got to just look at each person and where they are in their career and what they want to achieve. And, you know, like, for example, now Philly's come onto the team, you know, Jette Bastenberg and Philly will really link in well together and drive towards the marathon, and they'll probably do the same one. So things like that, you know, they're sort of natural decisions that, you know, it works to sort of work together towards a similar goal. And yeah, I guess in each individual's path is going to be different. They're at different ages and different points in their careers. So I wouldn't say, you know, the main goal is that people run fast times and run for their, you know, their nation's teams. Ultimately that's their goal and my goal. So yeah, I guess that's just how it is in athletics. You always have another competition, you know, the next year there's something every year and there's always something to be aiming for, and it's how you get there and, you know, what do you do next to make the next improvement? That's the trick, isn't it?
Yeah, I think you're bang on. What are the key differences then between coaching women and coaching men? If you picked any up yet, there's probably a few.
I guess emotionally there's differences, but it's not always women to men. Like when I was an athlete, I trained with lads quite a lot, so I didn't sort of see that women training together, what it would be like. I didn't really put myself in that position, so that's new. But I see it as a positive that, you know, I think, you know, these girls are really supportive of each other and understand things and that, you know, what each other's going through. I think maybe they feel comfortable talking to me about certain things that they wouldn't feel comfortable talking to a male coach about. But I think that's changing. You know, I think times are changing and people are a lot more open about everything now and, you know, how they're feeling and what's going on in their health and things like that. And I think that's the same for men and women, to be honest with you. I don't think it's too different.
Yeah, everyone's just trying to run fast at the end of the day, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Look, well, it's been great to chat to you, Helen. We wish you all the best with the rest of it and where it's going. You might obviously to the guys and girls as well.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting three matches at Lower.com Field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at ColumbusCrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.